Lorena here from Everything's Canceled podcast. Herman and I hope you've been enjoying our show. The best way to support us right now is to subscribe to our Patreon for some exclusive episodes and more at patreon.com/everythingscanceled. And don't forget, there's only one L in canceled. And shop our new merch on our Shopify. The Shopify is everythingscanceled.myshopify.com. Now let's get to today's show. You're listening to Everything's Canceled podcast with your hosts,
Herman
and Lorena. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening to right now and follow us on Instagram at Everything's Canceled podcast. In each episode, we discuss topics in detail that could be triggering for some listeners, so please listen with care.
All content provided in this podcast is for general information and entertainment purposes only. Any copyrighted content reproduced in this podcast is done so in accordance with Section 107 of the Copyright Act, allowing fair use and is not an infringement of copyright. Any information discussed referring to specific incidents are allegations only, unless proven otherwise in a court of law. Due to the changing nature of laws, rules, and regulations, the hosts make no representations to the accuracy or completeness of any information in this podcast and will not be liable for any errors, omissions, nor the availability of this information, for any losses, injuries, or damage from the display or use of this information.
Welcome back to Everything's Canceled. This is the second part of the Drake Bell cancellation story.
And in our first episode, we covered Drake's child endangerment case and the specifics of the charges and how that case came to be. And we also covered his victim's story, the full story that she gave and the full allegations that she made against Drake in the video at his sentencing hearing. And we covered a little bit about what happened since then leading up towards the documentary.
Yeah, I think we left you on a pretty good cliffhanger for the last episode. It was, you know, pretty juicy, I think, if you've never heard any of this, or even if you had, but maybe putting it into context after this documentary. I don't know, we might get a lot of hate for the last episode, but that's okay.
Well, it definitely was a real twist for me learning about all this stuff. We didn't really know about all this stuff. We didn't really know the details of it. And some of the details that we did know, consensus was that people were pretty ready to explain it away and dismiss it as nothing. But then when we look at what that really is, Drake pleading to lesser charges the same way that Brian Peck did, and also the ways in which it seems as though the story has been manipulated by his defense and then also his online defenders, it paints a very different picture, which I think I said too many times, but it does.
In the last episode, I had said something that Herman over here had cut out just because he thought I worded it funny. So I'm going to frame two things in the episode today before we hop in. And the first thing that was deleted before was that I think it's important to frame both of these episodes with the idea that we can hold two ideas in our minds, in our hands at the same time, that Drake can be a victim and a perpetrator, and that most perpetrators are both a perpetrator and a victim. And as uncomfortable as that conversation is, we don't know Brian Peck's story. And I'm very curious that if we heard what Brian Peck's story was, you know, whatever abuses and horrible things that he's endured in his life to make him who he is today. And maybe that's nothing. Maybe he is just a psycho out of nowhere and no one's hurt
really
him before.
Have no idea.
We don't know. But statistically speaking, he is like 75% chance that he has endured similar abuses in his life. Would we see him differently? And would we be able to hold space for his victim story? Or is the fact that we heard his perpetrator story before his victim story, does that change things? But it didn't for Drake.
Yeah.
We heard what Drake did before we knew that he was a victim of something. So anyways, I think it's important to hold space for both ideas and that we can empathize with Drake as a victim and the ways that he has come forward. We can also critique some of the ways that he has handled the situation. Although, you know, I do kind of, if he's using his victim story to rehabilitate his image, I'm not even like fully against that. Like, as much as we can critique it and be like, I'm also just kind of like, Well, he's allowed to do that too. It doesn't necessarily bother me. However, I do have problems with him maybe not addressing directly the things that he has done or has continued to possibly lie about, which is why we brought this story to the pod, because it's definitely something to talk about.
It is a complicated story. I don't think we're just here to say, oh, Drake is a scumbag, because for one, we don't know if any of these things actually happened, because they're all allegations and some of them come from sources that are fairly unproven, like the things that we're going to get into in this podcast, the allegations that were made from ex-girlfriends and from people on TikTok. But that's what we're trying to learn here. And I think that's how we're feeling about this, is that we are feeling a lot of sympathy for Drake, but we're also learning more about him and learning things that are sometimes obscured and that need to be taken into consideration when you look at the whole situation and when you try and have an appropriate discussion about what's going on here.
I think that's what made this such an interesting story to bring to the podcast, because it's complicated and there's several opposing feelings going on at the same time. And I think that we have a lot of these situations in our lives. People who hurt us have been hurt, and how do we humanize them, and how much should we humanize them, and how do we handle accountability and rehabilitation and change? What can be forgiven, what isn't? These are huge topics that people deal with in their real lives. And that's why I love celebrity shit, because it puts one big story out into the public and we watch the public comment on it and dissect it and digest it and apply it to their own lives. It may not always be productive in the ways I think it should, but it's always interesting. The other thing that I want to quickly address before we hop into this episode is I also want to kind of backpedal and frame some comments that I make in this podcast. And I actually haven't even listened back to it. Just Herman made me aware that we talk about Josh Peck being a fat kid and him being casted as a fat kid in fat kid roles. And I think I say it so much that it might come across like I'm making fun of him. But Josh Peck himself talks about this. He went on this big weight loss journey, and it's a complicated situation. Like, he felt like he had to do that to find other roles. And this is a complicated thing in Hollywood, that fat kids are only casted in fat kid roles. And the same thing happens for black people, and they're only casted in certain archetypes or roles or whatever. This happens in Hollywood, and Josh is pretty open about that himself and the ways that that affected his self-confidence as a kid, the ways that it affected his relationship with Drake, and some of the things that we see in his behaviors to this day, his substance abuse issues and the ways that his career either went in different directions or it just all over ended. And so it's an interesting topic, but I just don't want anyone thinking that I'm like fat shaming Josh. Just framing that before we hop into this episode.
I think that sometimes when we have these conversations, it feels like, and I've really struggled at times when I'm trying to describe specific events, things that are really horrific and are definitely things that were traumatic for the people who experienced them, that as I'm trying to describe them and thinking about it going out on this podcast and being listened to potentially over and over and over again and representing these horrific and traumatic things, that sometimes that itself feels problematic, or that we're just explaining situations that are problematic, and by merely explaining them without like qualifying the ways in which they are problematic or the ways in which that we don't want them to recreate those problems again, like the fat shaming that Josh Peck experienced as an actor, or, you know, that he experienced, we don't want to be representing that here simply by talking about it or trying to describe it. And it seems to be a really difficult line to walk. And we've had to do that in most of these pods, and it's a difficult thing to do. And I wanted to maybe just put that here as a bit of a trigger warning, that that's something that we're trying to deal with actively and try and deal with as we talk about and have these discussions throughout and do our best. And we hope that we're doing that. So
it's hard to be a podcaster. It's hard to tell the story the way that you want. We're not perfect here, but we do read all of your comments and criticisms, and we take them into consideration in editing, recording, and sometimes not, but we at least chew them over and, you know, see in the ways that we can improve in every episode.
We're here for thoughtful critique, and we're here to start discussion for sure. And the discussion will continue between us.
Yeah. And so with that, today's episode, we're going to finish the Drake story. And I think we're just going to hop right into continuing to talk about his latest music video. The music video itself is about, it opens up with like this child getting raped in a Hollywood trailer. And the entire song's lyrics are about being abused. And actually, I wanted to dissect the lyrics.
Yeah, let's talk about the song and the video a little bit.
Not to keep talking about my own trauma, but that's what music and art is for, is to feel things and all of this. And his song was so striking to me. I too was raped as a child. So obviously I look for people in the media or just in everyday life who have the same stories and similar feelings, because honestly there are feelings and thoughts and all these things that other people can't understand or relate to. And even though I have supportive friends and family, I want to talk to other victims and I want to hear their art and their stories and their feelings, because it makes me feel less strange or alone, right? And so I'm like, oh my god, I needed what Drake said in that documentary. I needed him to say the things he did about what Brian Peck did to him for every boy out there who's been molested and has never had a male role model to come forward about this. Like I said, we're going to hold two things in our hands here. Like, Drake probably did some really awful things to this young girl. He also did some really remarkable things about fucking coming forward about this. I can't say enough about that. And so the song comes out and I'm listening to it. And there's parts of the lyrics that are just so, I had to sit with it.
It's called I Kind of Relate. And the song starts off with the piano playing. And it has a very clear musical reference to The Carpenters, Close to You. And I found that very interesting as well, considering the lyrics I Kind of Relate. And the story of Karen Carpenter. And honestly, I was really impressed by what a good song this is. And I think that musical reference was really interesting and apt. And then the song goes on to, it kind of bounces along with the piano and harmonies. It's kind of Beatles-esque. There's a big Brian May guitar riff.
Yeah, and it was clearly produced for this time, for when this documentary came out. That's very clear. The video is made for that. However, it almost kind of takes place in the time when he was moving to Mexico. And he was moving to Mexico after he allegedly sexually assaulted this girl. He got married and then moved to Mexico in 2019, right before she had reported everything officially to the police. But a year after, in 2018, remember, she told him, I'm going to go to the Illinois police. And they had kind of thrown out that case, or however they worked that out, like, we're not going to do anything unless Ohio doesn't. So he moved to Mexico, and this song kind of sounds like it takes place at this time after he knew that this girl had gone to the police, right after he had gotten married and already had allegations online from these past girlfriends claiming that he had abused them, but before the world knew that he was a victim of Brian Peck. So when you think about the context of where he was and these lyrics, he says, I kind of relate. I found beauty in my pain. I'm running away from the abuse and all the shame. I kind of relate. I lost my past so long ago in 2008, which is right about when he started getting his first DUI. In the video, it shows him kind of getting, like, he's got a bloody mouth. He's all fucked up in a car crash.
In the video, it goes directly from him being like in a trailer with this guy who looks like Brian Peck. And then the next, he goes straight into being in a car and crashing it. You know, in his story, he talks about how he doesn't really remember a lot of what happened in his life other than the abuse around that time, because obviously like substance abuse became an issue. And I think that...
Well, and disassociation, you just sort of... A lot of people will forget the abuse, but for some of us, it's the opposite, that we remember the abuse and everything else kind of is gray in the background. And I think that's what he's described.
And so it kind of portrays that in the video, like I said, where he goes directly from being abused to waking up in a car that's been crashed.
Then it goes on, in the rest of the song, he just repeats, "I know I was wrong, but I'm bound to make it right. I know I was wrong, but I'm bound to make it right." And something that we didn't mention, like we talked about how as much as Drake was an actor, music was his actual love. He did music all through his time through Nickelodeon, and then he really didn't do much acting. He mostly did music. And at some point, like he says, no one wanted him in the States, whatever the fuck that means, all around the time that this girl, the past girlfriends, because what, why else was, why, he hadn't been canceled yet, his court case hadn't come public, so what is he talking about, no one wanted him in the States, what does that even mean? And it's like, oh, because you have all this personal shit going on that we didn't really know about yet. Looks like you're getting some DUIs, looks like you're probably not doing too well. So we hadn't talked about this. Drake became big in Mexico. He doesn't even understand why, but Mexico like really loved Drake. If you go on his YouTube videos, all the comments are people, you know, talking in Spanish. His songs are in Spanish. He knows Spanish. He got himself a Mexican wife. But it's just interesting that like the song talks about the time before he was even canceled. No one wants him in the States. No one's knocking at his door. And honestly, this entire episode was originally planned to talk about the very strange relationship between him and Josh Peck. And once I learned about this case and started doing the timeline of all the things that has gone on in Drake's life since his abuse, it really puts into context this complicated relationship that he has with Josh. I'm just going to chime in. So,
or at least it seems to, it starts to make a bit more sense when you take some of this other stuff into consideration.
Right. Because right when the documentary came out, just like everyone else, I was like, what does Josh have to say about this? Because we were all sold this image for our entire childhood that Drake and Josh must be best friends. How can you have chemistry on stage like that and be brothers on set like this and not be at least friends to some degree, right? If not best friends. We wanted them to be best friends. It's just one of those relationships on the screen that you hope is in real life. And so I was like, well, does Josh know about his abuse? What has their friendship timeline been? And I started digging, and it's like, so there's a few pivotal things that happened with Drake and Josh. Josh Peck's memoir. He wrote a book. He talks about his own struggles with abuse. He grew up with a single mom, really poor. He talked about how he really wasn't paid a lot through Nickelodeon, so he really suffered. And the biggest thing was he was the fat kid who lost all the weight, but his transformation didn't really bring new work. He was actually casted more as a fat kid. And he looks back on this time on screen with Drake. Drake sees Josh as his sidekick, that they worked so well together. He refers to them as Abbott and Costello, or he refers to them as like some other duo all the time, that he's just like, that's what we were going to be together. He needed Josh to be his other side. Josh looks at it as, I was the brunt of the joke. Like, I was the joke of us two, right? I'm the fat kid, and everything came back to me being fat, and you got to be the cool one. You needed me to be cool, and I don't want to be that anymore. He lost the weight so he didn't have to be that character anymore. He tried to move on, and forever, everyone knows Drake and Josh as Drake and Josh. You don't say Drake without Josh, and you don't say Josh without Drake. And Josh just couldn't divorce himself from Drake. And I always thought, okay, well, maybe his resentment towards Drake and their weird friendship is that he hasn't quite gotten over his own insecurities of being the forever fat kid. I mean, that's fair. It sucks. But part of me was like, I don't know, Josh, maybe you need to get over it because you might have a really good friendship here. So that friendship moves on and there becomes more hot and cold. Specifically, Drake keeps pushing Josh to do a like a reunion show.
Yeah, they want to do a reboot.
A reboot of Drake and Josh. And Josh finally reluctantly agrees. And once again, I put the fault on Josh here because Josh wrote like a super racist script. It was about...
It's Josh and Drake where, and he...
Yeah,
and
Josh and Drake this time.
And he specifically inverted a lot of the roles. And I what I remember about it was that Drake didn't want to do it because he made Drake the butt of all the jokes.
Yeah, but then he makes the whole thing about Drake going to Mexico and being a washed up musician. And he stereotypes Mexican people as drug dealers and shit and puts Drake in this whole situation where he's getting like the Mexican mafia is all wrapped up with him. And like Drake was married to his wife was Mexican. And so he's just like, what the fuck? This entire thing is racist. Mexican people aren't inherently drug dealers. Like what? And so Josh was like, well, never mind. Like I tried and like scrapped it. Once again, I was like, it must be Josh. But then I put this timeline together and I'm not saying it's not Josh. Josh seems to have his own issues. The more I dive into him, he's out there. You know what I mean?
He seems like he's been able to translate himself to like a new media environment in a different way than Drake. I think you told me that he was a Vine star, which is something that missed me. But it seems like he's pretty active on social. He definitely does podcast interviews and stuff.
So the big headliner between the Drake and Josh marriage, the bro marriage, is when Josh got married and didn't invite Drake. And the way we found out about that was because Drake took to the internet to tweet, which he seems to be really good at doing, whining. He causes some drama online. Like Drake is very vocal about his fights with other people on his Twitter. And he writes a status on the day of Josh's wedding. Wow, you got married and I wasn't even invited? What the fuck? And the whole internet blew up because this is how we all find out, like, oh, Drake and Josh aren't as close as we thought. And Josh was just like, first off, it like ruined his wedding day. His wife is getting all these messages calling her the Yoko Ono of Drake and Josh. This woman came in and like separated these people and they had to make a statement on their wedding day of just like, Drake and I haven't talked in years. We had a small wedding. No, I didn't invite him. Like, it has nothing to do with anything. And this was a huge fight between them. And the internet begged them to make up. And Josh kind of does this fake video with him where he's like, hey, bro, like, we're fine, right? Tell the internet we're fine. And then as soon as he was done filming that, he kind of threatened Drake and was like, you owe my wife an apology. You ruined her wedding day. Apparently, Drake did apologize and then they're fine. Drake and his wife did a podcast for a while and they talk about how their relationship, Drake and Josh's relationship, has always been really confusing and hot and cold. But anyways, I look back on this and I look at the timeline and I'm like, wow, Josh got married in 2017, which is when these incidences with the girl in the child endangerment case were happening. It wasn't out yet, but this is when this is happening. This is right after Drake had two DUIs and the allegations that he abused his ex-girlfriend came out. And I don't know if Josh knew about Drake's abuse. There have been hints that Josh has always supported him, has always known about it. Drake is very defensive of Josh. Don't come after him about that. He's been very supportive. But if he knew all of that, I also wonder, like, how much did Josh know about Drake's relationship to minors and the girls at his shows and his ex-girlfriends? Is it possible that Josh just didn't want a sexual abuser at his wedding? I can't help but reframe that now completely. Josh might not be perfect, but maybe he just didn't want to be Drake's best friend anymore for good reason.
Or just like his sidekick or the butt of the joke to maybe somebody who he didn't respect if he knew some of these details about him.
Yeah. Josh was pretty open for a while about his drug and alcohol issues. I mean, they both have talked about it. It just seems like maybe their friendship was, you know, when they were younger and more for the fans than like a true friendship. And I think that they struggle to find that balance. But it's just interesting looking at that relationship in context to the things that were going on in Drake's life at that time.
So the other thing we wanted to talk about is that there were numerous other allegations made against Drake by several ex-girlfriends and a number of other anonymous people who made allegations against Drake in social media messages. And all of these were things that were publicized on the social media of Drake's ex-girlfriend, Melissa Lingefelt. On her TikTok, she made some videos telling her story about her relationship with Drake and how it was abusive. And then she received messages from other people in response to this, and then she began sharing those as well.
First off, I would like to start out with saying, I don't really care if anyone believes me, as this is my story and my life and something that I went through. It wasn't until recently that I actually realized that abuse isn't something that all women have to go through. When I started dating Drake, I was 16. I was homeschooled. I moved in with him. I was singing. It wasn't until about a year when the verbal abuse started. When I say verbal abuse, I mean, imagine the worst type of verbal abuse you could ever imagine, and that was what I got. It then turned into physical, hitting, throwing, everything. At the pinnacle of it, he dragged me down the stairs of our house in Los Feliz. My face hit every step on the way down. I have photos of this. I don't even want to get into the underage girls thing. I mean, I will, but I'm scared.
I think one thing that particularly stands out is the way that she describes the verbal abuse and the way that Drake would verbally abuse her, which is the imagine the worst type of statement, which is so interesting because we heard that exact same statement from Drake during his interview during Quiet on Set.
Yeah, like, did that come to mind? I mean, it's true. When you look at what happened with Brian Peck, I mean, it was horrific. It's just like, I wonder if that line was in his head because he had read this. I mean, that's such a coincidence.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I think is interesting is the way in which the victim in the child endangerment case, the way that she described him as being abusive, when she didn't give him what he wanted, he would be very verbally abusive and make her feel awful and make her cry. Melissa says a lot of similar things. And so in response to some of the things that she's saying on TikTok, she starts getting DMs from other people, and she shares a DM conversation that she has. I'll post all this on our Instagram, by the way. So visit our Instagram. All of these videos have been subsequently deleted, but you can still find them. Their original videos have been deleted, but you can still find them around. And she shares DMs between her and another ex-girlfriend of Drake's. Her name is Payden Lane Lopachin, L-O-P-A-C-H-I-N. No idea how to say that right, but Lopachin. And she says that she dated Drake for 5 years. And in the conversation, she tells Lingefelt, she says, I will stand by your side and back you up as I went through the same horrific verbal, physical, and mental abuse. She writes that she was manipulated and brainwashed. And when Lingefelt replies to her, Lingefelt replies and says, he had sex with hundreds of underage girls. And Lopachin answers her, yes. And she writes, there were so many days where I thought Melissa went through this and she got out. And he called me a cunt and loved to call me a whore. And they commiserate about how he loved to call them those horrible things. And then she also publicizes DMs that she receives from another ex-girlfriend. Her name is Jillian Leos, L-E-O-S. She shares her experience and she says, I know this to be true from personal experience. We went to high school together and dated from 2001 to 2005/6, from the age of 16 to about 21. Thank you for speaking out. I wish I had more receipts. I have some photos. Unfortunately, no voicemails or text because he broke every phone I had back then. Like you, I have many friends and witnesses to attest to what he put me through. He is a narcissistic sociopath, and I know there are more of us out there.
It's hard because it's like, what we're really looking at here is, right now I'm assuming all of these victims are telling the truth, so I'm operating from that.
We are certainly hearing the same story from all of them, so it seems to lend credibility from one story to the next that they all experienced the same things, potentially.
Yeah, but what we're looking at here is, like, everyone wants to separate Drake's childhood abuse that happened to him from what he's done. And the problem is that we try to separate these things, and they're not separate. Drake is who he is because of what happened to him. This right here, a man who screams profanities at women, who throws them downstairs, who talks to underage girls, is a man who was sexually abused by a much older man, had the most horrific things happen to him, and then went on to, yes, he took Brian Peck to court and he got a little bit of justice there, but he also just had to like swallow it and move on with his life, never talk about it. He then found alcohol and drugs. The only therapy he talks about was the therapy where he didn't admit Brian Peck was abusing him. And then the rehab that he did, which, by the way, he talks about like, oh, I went to rehab and that's what led me to like be okay with doing this documentary. It kind of sounds like he had to go into rehab to be able to sign on to the documentary. So he is like fresh out of rehab when he goes onto the documentary, which is probably why he's like got that glazed over looked face of like he had just been therapized for like 8 hours a day for however many weeks and has all of these new therapy words and all of these feelings and is feeling really calm and new and refreshed because he is like, he hasn't relapsed yet. He is fresh out of therapy and rehab, which is great for him. And I hope it sticks and I hope he doesn't relapse. But it's like, he is still a very broken person. He is still very broken. There's just, you don't come out of that not broken for a very long time. And he didn't get magically fixed in this one blip of rehab, clearly, because he still will not address all of this stuff in an appropriate manner.
So Melissa on her TikTok in these videos, she also publishes a few DMs that she receives from different people who accuse Belle of statutory rape in several different situations. She posts three different ones. One that says, and these are anonymous messages that come in the DMs. There is nothing to corroborate these stories other than what they are. These are purely blind items. But one of them says, I met Drake in early 2007 when I was 16. He was dating you at the time, referring to Melissa. Didn't stop him from fucking my 15-year-old friend, who was a virgin. I believe you. I am so sorry for what you endured and what my friend endured, because that was statutory rape.
Wow.
There's another message that accuses him of essentially the same thing, of sleeping with a 15-year-old when he was 20. And then there's one more.
It says, here goes nothing. A couple years ago, Drake was performing at a benefit concert for my high school, back when I was in eighth grade. The entire concert, Drake wasn't who you'd expect him to be like. After the concert, all I remember is that I met Drake and he raped me. I was in fucking eighth grade. This guy that I had idolized as a kid was a rapist. He is a fucking sicko. Jesus.
So again, these are just from DMs from anonymous people, but nonetheless, they seem significant. And Drake did respond to what happened with Melissa. And again, take into consideration the things that the victim said. Again, I want to bring them up again. Does he sound like somebody who would be remorseful or who is potentially using tactics to manipulate the public? Because Drake's response is this. I never abused my ex-girlfriend or did so many of the other things Melissa falsely claimed on her TikTok video. As our relationship ended more than a decade ago, we unfortunately both called each other terrible names, as often happens when couples are breaking up, but that is it. Clearly, Melissa still felt close enough to me just last year that she was comfortable reaching out to ask me to provide her with financial support during a tough time, which I did. I do not know if today's behavior is some kind of misguided quest for more money or attention, but I cannot and will not allow these offensive and defamatory allegations to go unchallenged. I am reviewing my legal options. So, finish that one with a threat there.
And I mean, it's hard because it's like, well, if he didn't do it, what would he say? Another interesting one, and I am not saying that this is true. I tried to do some, like, internet research on this the best I could, but there is a TikTok video I'm sure you can find it if you try.
Again, we'll put these on our Instagram so you can see all this stuff.
Yeah. So there's a girl. She's got red hair and a nose piercing, I think. And she says...
It's a girl on TikTok with a nose piercing. Have you heard of her?
So she goes on TikTok to say that she found some Instagram evidence of these photos where Drake is with this underage girl. She at least looks really young in the first picture that she shows. There's pictures of her and Drake, like, she's got her arm wrapped up in his arm. There's pictures where they're, like...
Yeah, she shows...
Like, chest to body, like, they look like couple photos.
There's a whole bunch of... And she just kind of, like, goes back in time, right, through Instagram. Yeah, and she shows, like, all these different times where she's, like, hanging out with Drake and
she's
close.
Eating with him. There's birthday posts. There's hearts. There's stuff in Spanish that I didn't know. But, like, seemed to be, like... A lot of constant contact all the way up into the documentary. Like, congrats on the documentary and your new hit release. And just a lot of lovey-dovey stuff. There's pictures of them together. And then when she goes back in time, she looks at the date of this girl's homecoming. She found the school, that it's a high school. She didn't out the girl because she didn't want the girl to be, like, bombarded. And that she was underage when he took the other photos with her. So... If there's something romantic here...
Yeah, it shows her as part of the, you know, she's the homecoming queen or homecoming princess at her school in high school in 2022. And she shows that this girl has been interacting closely with Drake for a while leading up to that and beyond that.
Can we assume that this is a sexual relationship? No. There's no explanation, but it's not like, oh my gosh, my cousin, there's nothing like that we could see. It's just like kind of like inconspicuous, like flirty. I don't know. I don't know what to think of it.
It just seems so weird. If it seems to depict what it seems to depict, it would depict him dating currently within, you know, like in the last few years as an adult man. Dating another teenage girl who is again the same age, like 15-16 years old.
What I can say is if Drake is completely innocent of everything, but he still has these allegations against him that are like muddying up his reputation, specifically with girls who are underage, then you need to be like more careful with the pictures that you put online with these girls or let them put of you. Like if some girl accused you of, you know, statutory rape underage, and then later another girl posts like pictures of you arm in arm with little hearts, like wouldn't you tell that girl, like, hey bro, the internet already thinks I'm a pedophile,
other accusers.
Yeah, you should probably take those photos down. They might give people the wrong idea because people already think I'm a pedophile. Like, he's being, best case scenario, he's being really sloppy there. Worst case scenario, he's dating a minor.
I mean, what's the deal? I mean, dime store psychoanalysis, like you're hanging out with teenagers all the time, like the ones who are the same age as you when you were abused. Is that a thing for you, man? Or like beyond that, is his fan base mostly teenagers? And so he's out touring and these are the girls that he meets. Like it's like a dude in a teenage band situation where the guys get old, but audience is just teenagers. And, you know, we'd think there are a lot of band dudes who got canceled for shit like that. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is there.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot to pathologize there. Like I said in the beginning, like child sex abuse victims have a warped sexuality development. Often they will then have victims who were the same age that they were when they were abused. That's very common to get kind of stuck in that age. It normalizes older people with younger people. That was all of your first experiences. And then also drugs and alcohol warp your judgment. There's a lot that we can pathologize there. I'm not his therapist. I don't know what's going on. But damn, this sucks, right?
So... The other thing that I really wanted to talk about was the letter, the specific language that's in the letter that Kimmy Robertson wrote in defense of Brian Peck back in 2004. And it's just very strange the way that it characterizes the situation. And we talked about these letters a little bit already and how some of them characterize the situation in a very strange way. Some of the other ones, like talking about how Brian Peck must have been extremely tempted, or that he must have been forced into the situation somehow. And this letter is definitely the strangest and the one that kind of goes the farthest with that narrative. And so I just kind of want to read a few details from it for you. What's strange about this letter is it's handwritten, and I don't know, it's different. But it starts out the way all the other ones do, talking about how Kimmy Robertson knows Brian Peck, that they worked on a movie together and they became just such good friends, and he's just so great, you know, he's just, you know, what a great guy. Then she goes on to say that they're together, they were making their way in this business and avoiding all the rotten people that are so attracted to acting and actors. She says, until now, I had the misfortune of working on, and this is like a blank TV show. And she said, I'll make this short. I noticed this young man kept asking me about Brian and generally being quote-unquote sleuth-like. I also noticed no gay male in makeup slash hair or PA would be alone in a room with him. I knew that Brian was helping blank this person with his new resume and talked to Brian about this guy. Brian said he would never be alone with him or anyone under 21 ever again, that he had made amends and not to worry. I believe with all my heart that Brian was pressured and pushed beyond belief before he caved in with, redacted, an outrageous, overtly gay, oversexed person with no idea what he is doing to Brian, Brian's family, and Brian's friends. He totally took advantage of Brian's willingness to help anyone who needs it.
I mean, on one hand, I obviously just want to throw it out because it's like you're accusing a kid of being this.
Yeah, it seems preposterous.
But then on the other hand, it's like, well, are we talking about a kid who's already been sexually abused by an adult in the industry and he's learned this behavior? He's been taught that this is how you move forward and that this is what the adults in the industry do. So is he acting these ways towards people? Like, did this formulate some of his personality at the time?
When it comes to all of the allegations and accusations that we've talked about in this podcast so far, I find most of them to be believable and credible. Now, again, they're allegations and these things have not, he's not been convicted of any of them. But when we get to this one definitely, like, it lights up the skeptical part of me again. It seems like such a bizarre characterization that I just can't believe it to be true. But then it just does also really throw a wrench in everything. It's so strange the way that the letters of defense attempt to flip the roles of, like, victim and abuser here. And then that just seems to really get my mind spinning when I think about the cyclical nature of how this abuse tends to repeat itself and who's a victim and who's an abuser and where do you draw that line. It really complicates things, and this letter is difficult to believe, but it's complicated like that is too.
Yeah, there's never cases like this that aren't complicated. Like, they're all very complicated. We still don't know Brian Peck's story. Like, no one wants to hear that because he's the villain right now. And he is. He absolutely is. Yep. But, dude, what had to fucking happen to that guy to do the things that he did to Drake? And then you look at, like, these allegations against Drake and we go, well, fuck, what happened to you to make you such a monster? And it's like, well, we do know. We happen to know the whole story of Drake, right? I mean,
we know
as much as we know.
What we know. And then again, it's like we only know what we know. And we know that that's probably pretty limited, but what can we take from that?
Yeah, and it's interesting because we were definitely fed this image of Drake in this documentary where it's like, here is the healed Drake. He is an adult now, and he is coming to tell his story. But some things that, like, I want to point out with that is that Drake admits right off the bat he has never talked about this outside of therapy. He then goes on to tell his story where it seems, at least from what he said, he's had very limited therapy, that he did not talk about this or think about it for a very long time. He dove into drugs and alcohol starting in at least his first DUI in 2009 when he's 23, but it seems like there's a lot possibly going on before that with drugs and alcohol. And then his wife separates from him right before the documentary. He's got a baby. He got married in 2018, right after the things happened with the girl in the case. Moved to Mexico in 2019. And then he had a son in 2022, so he's still a baby. And in 2023, he got divorced when he was 37. And the documentary is less than a year later. And his divorce, her final straw with him was that he was caught huffing a balloon while his baby was in the back seat. And she was just like, she filed for full custody and moved to Florida, and he gets visitations. And he threatened to like hang himself if she left him. It was like full divorce drama. And then, yeah, like I said, his rehab, it seems like he possibly had to agree to go to rehab to get on this documentary. It doesn't say that, but it just says he signed on to rehab at the same time that he signed on to the documentary. And the way that he talks about how the people who did the documentary came to him about it and how it was in group therapy that made him feel like he could then come out and do it. He doesn't say it, but there's some, like, if you put the pieces together, it's like, did you have to do rehab? What place were you in? You're like at rock bottom with your divorce. I don't know if they could have him on the documentary in the state that he was in, is all I'm saying.
And also, while I think this documentary, it shines light on a lot of really important things, and I learned a lot about it, or I learned a lot from it about Brian Peck and about Dan Schneider and about Nickelodeon and the environment there and about the entertainment industry in general. And so it has a lot of positive value, but I do think that we do need to be critical of the documentary as well, as far as platforming Drake and for it not covering any of this at all, for not covering anything into Drake's background as far as this abuse as well. It really only very briefly mentions it and kind of explains it away. And so I think that that is something that, like, when we look back on this documentary, we have to think about what's left out. And this is a big chunk.
Not only do I think it's possible that Drake possibly did this documentary to redeem his reputation, mm-hmm. I think it's very possible that the documentary did have him go to rehab and come on after rehab and therapy.
Having his music video come out at the same time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I think that they had a part in that as well to cover up why, like, cover up their reputation for having an abuser on. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yeah, but he's healed. Now, he's clean and he's healed and he's coming out now. This is the healed Drake, without addressing that he's very freshly rock bottom, very freshly sober. Can we even call someone sober by that point? Like, he has no chips under his belt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're sober if you're sober. One day is a day. I'm not taking that away from Drake.
I am the daughter of an alcoholic. It took me 3 years of sobriety to consider him sober. I don't know.
I'm not saying that you need to accept it from people immediately, but if you're struggling out there, then I am not
considering it permanent, and I would not be surprised if he relapses again. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not even saying that from a judgmental point of view of just like, dude, this kid's been through a fucking lot. He's been through a lot and he's done a lot. Drake's had a rough life. It's not a pretty story.
No, not at all. And it's a complicated story. It's not just a victim story. It's not just an abuser story. It's not necessarily a story of just innocence or evil. It's really a lot of those things at once. And to really try and comprehend where he is, or to comprehend the story at all, you really have to try and hold all of those thoughts in your mind at once. And I think there's also probably a lot more to it too that we don't know. We're working with limited information, as we always are.
Yeah. What I can say is, like, there was the question posed of, like, accountability over cancellation. And I think that maybe Drake's story isn't completely over. And what I hope is that this is a turning point for him, that he will start to do the work and realize what he's done. And that can't even begin until he's actually fully unpacked his trauma, which, you know, a few weeks in rehab doesn't do. He has a lot of time to have to figure this out and process it. And also, like, while a lot of the things that he did was probably healing and cathartic, I don't know how much work you can do in front of a camera. Like, saying this is the first time you've talked about this outside of therapy and you do it in front of a camera, I don't know how much healing you're doing in that process. I think, you know, he's saying, oh, it's so healing coming out and talking about it. Has he had a minute alone to be like, holy shit, I just told the whole world what happened to me, my most vulnerable things? He needs time. And
yeah,
I hope
he's just been doing more interviews, really. He's been pretty busy.
Yeah. Has he connected the dots that, like, he was the same age as the girl was when he was texting her to hurry up and turn 18? Has he made these connections that we can connect from the outside? Has he been able to,
or is he way beyond that and he's just a predator?
Yeah, like, I don't know. There's a lot there. So I hope that he starts to change and figure it out. Like,
well, and also not just a predator, a keen manipulator and, like, adapter, like, of the situation and of, like, of our image of him.
Yeah.
It raises a lot of questions, for sure. And it brings me back over and over to the questions that the victim in his child endangerment case raised. Is he trying to manipulate us, and what tactics is he using? And is he remorseful if these things happened? And what do his actions and his words say about that, if that's true?
Yeah, because like I said, he's the story that we needed, right? Like, a lot of his story I resonate with, but then also just, like, I loved that such a prominent male figure that was a child star that all of these boys my generation will relate to will have a male role model of, like, how to speak out against the abuse. Because I do feel like as a girl I have more privilege in spaces to talk about being raped, whether it's underage or as an adult, than men or little boys experience. And so I'm like, wow, like, we needed this story. But then also, like, you know what story we do need are the people who were abused, who went on to abuse others and came out to talk about it. Like, holy shit, I am a fucked up person. I did this because someone hurt me. And, like, how do you overcome this? How do you make these apologies? How do you make it right? Like his song, I did wrong, but I'm gonna make it right. It's like, obviously there's stuff brewing in you. You know, he knows that for him to come out and say these things about Brian, that if he's done these things to these girls, he's got to make it right. And I don't know how he plans to do that. I don't know how someone can do that.
Yeah, what does that look like? I feel like that's an incredibly difficult question.
I think admitting it is the first step, right? Like, to not do it again is another step. To actually have a part in your son's life and teach him consent and all of these things, that's also a huge step. That's how you break that cycle. Some major therapy. And I have to ask this myself this all the time. What would make me forgive my abuser? What do I want for him? What would make it better for me? All of these things I've had to ask these same questions. What would I want my abuser to do? And, like, I have answers for myself. I don't know if they're the same for other people. I hope he doesn't hurt anyone else again. I hope he teaches his sons consent and bodily autonomy and keeping your body to yourself. I hope that he... I've wondered if I would accept an apology. I've wondered if he was abused himself, and I would love for him to fix the relationships in my life that were broken because of it. And I think about that girl in court saying, I don't have a relationship with my aunt anymore because he destroyed it. That my family's had to pay over $7,000 in therapy. Like, these are the things he can make right. He can pay the family back for therapy. He can talk to that aunt and admit what he did and help bridge a gap between this aunt and the girl and their relationship. those are things that he can make right that would make that girl's life better. He can ask her. He can fucking pay for her college. I don't know. He can do things that won't fix it, but would show true remorse.
Pay for a therapy, at least.
Yeah. Ask her what she needs in her life. It would be different than what I need in my life from my abuser, I'm sure. But these are the questions. That's why we wanted to do this podcast, because there's hard, complicated questions with these things. Celebrities, we try to like put them in this box as something not real and out there that we can't relate to. But I have related to Drake. I think people relate to these stories, and these are the complicated conversations that we have. How do abusers make it right? What is an actual apology? How do you move forward and not just be a rapist for the rest of your life?
Yeah, I feel like these situations are so complicated, and they're often the impulse and what happens in the media and what happens in the comments on the internet is that they're distilled down into yes or no, right or wrong, one or the other, you're right or wrong about it. And the more we think about it, the more we learn, and the more we talk about it, the more there is. And the more questions that I think I have and that we have.
We hope we covered everything. There is one or two things that we did not get to cover in this podcast. We kept trying to fit it in.
We never do get it all.
We're going to bring it to our Patreon.
Yep. We run long every time. We never get it all. So.
So we're going to dive. I don't think we're done diving into this.
I think we're going to try and stick with the format that we've got going right now, which is new episodes at the beginning of the week. And then we always have so much more to talk about. And there's always a bunch of things that we forget to talk about. And there's a bunch of things that we want to go in depth more on. And so I think we're going to try and record another episode and have that come out later in the week that has more in-depth thoughts and has more analysis. And we can probably be a bit more, we'll be able to say a lot more too about what we think, and we'll be able to be more candid. And so we'll use this as an opportunity to debut our Patreon, patreon.com/everythingscanceled. Easy to find.
Yep. Our Patreon, our Shopify, our Instagram. Mm-hmm. Those are the places to be. And again, if you rate us 5 stars, you get stickers. So send us your address.
Yeah, DM us and we'll send you some crap.
Tell us who your favorite is.
I love that you continue soliciting that. Well, everybody's favorite.
I know. Well, you know what?
You can stroke her ego. Feels good. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
You've gotten some great ones too.
Yeah.
If you love Herman, tell him. He hasn't been getting enough love over here.
It's all right. I'm just here to facilitate Lorena's podcast.
By the way, like, are we done with Nickelodeon at this point?
I'm hoping that we can maybe move on from here, because, oh my God, I don't know what's worse, having Drake stuck in my head as bad as I've had Drake stuck in my head, or the Dixie Chicks. I mean, honestly, all the music was great. I love the Dixie Chicks. I mean, I like the Dixie Chicks a lot more than Drake, but oh my God, I had that song, all of those songs on repeat while doing these pods, man, I'm ready to move on.
It is a great song. Okay.
Yeah, it's a great song. Honestly, his music's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty corny, but I thought the new song was, I mean, it's interesting, you know? And interesting music is a lot better than boring music.
I know who I want to cover next, but who do you want to cover next?
Oh my God, what should we do? I mean, we have a big list.
I know, but who's on your mind? Who are you wanting? Who are you itching? Because I know who I'm itching to do.
Say yours. I mean, you got an answer. Say yours.
Well, so it's obviously our alias names, Herman and Lorena, are, you know, if you listen to our intro pod, we talk about how these are our names because we wanted to pick names of people who were canceled who we didn't think should be canceled, which is rare for us because we love it when people get canceled for their shitty things. And, you know, Herman comes from Pee Wee Herman, and I thought I knew everything about Pee Wee Herman's cancellation, and turns out I don't, and there's more to dive in, and I'm curious if we come out of it feeling different about Pee Wee Herman or not. And I got really into the case over the weekend when I was trying to look something up, because I made some Pee Wee Herman merch for our pod, and I was like, you know what, maybe I should just dive in a little bit more, and I'm glad I did. And I would really love to do the Pee-wee Herman episode before we do Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah, Pee-wee would be fun. I'm looking forward to that one for sure.
Yeah, maybe like a more fun, kind of lighthearted one to get out of. Diddy and Nickelodeon have been real dark. So
yeah, for sure.
Unless something drastic pops up.
Okay, I know what I want to do.
What do you want to go for?
I want to do my baseball episode.
Oh, yeah, baseball season.
I
want to
do Wander Franco, Julio Urias, Trevor Bauer. Got so much to say about Trevor Bauer.
And Mike Clevinger.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we got to go there. Mm-hmm. Trevor Bauer's victim says that she can come on the pod because she's no longer tied up in the court cases where she can't say anything. So maybe if you want to send us some DMs, let us know. Pee-wee Herman or baseball, starting to get into the baseball season here. Let us know what you want to hear.
We'll do a poll on the Insta.
Yeah, because we could do Pee-wee Herman anytime. So let us know what you want to hear.
All right, let's wrap this up.
All right. Bye, Herman.
Bye.